You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giants fans, and welcome to a new edition of Locked On Giants. I'm Ed Valentine, along with co-host Patricia Traina, and we are coming to you on a Twitter Tuesday. Patty, you're ready to go through these questions today?
I am definitely ready. I love Twitter Tuesday. We get some really good questions from our listeners, our readers, and real excited to go through today's batch.
All right. So let's do that, Giants fans. Let's get started right away. Our first question comes from Mark. And Mark wants to know, what is the main reason we saw Vintage Eli in Houston on Sunday?
Well, I think you can start with the play of the offensive front. I mean, the offensive line, better protection. They did, you know, the assignments were a lot cleaner. You didn't see guys not finishing blocks. This time they were finishing blocks. It wasn't a perfect performance, but it was a lot better compared to what we saw against Dallas, where, you know, they were just flat out sloppy and it was just unacceptable. So, you know, you start off with that. And then I think the other reason for Eli's performance was they went with a game plan that better suited his strengths. And by that, I mean, against Dallas, the passing game was more of a horizontal scheme, you know, get the ball in the hands of the playmakers and let them do their thing. This particular game plan was more of a vertical passing scheme. You know, they did some underneath throws to kind of clear out the coverage, and then they took some strategic shots deep down the field. So I think, you know, getting back to what Eli does well, the play of the offensive line, and then, of course, you got to throw in the fact that, you know, they had the running game going, they had offensive balance, which I still think is a key to any game, and you have all the ingredients in place for a successful outing.
Patty, you hit most of the salient points there. You know, what I've written at Big Blue View is this is the way the Giants offense was designed to function. You know, you give Eli Manning, you know, a chance, you give him a running game that is making plays, and then you give him the opportunity, whether the Giants move the pocket or not, you give him the opportunity more often than not to set his feet, you know, and survey his targets, you know, and make a throw. And I think this is the kind of performance you're going to see. You're not going to see 25 out of 29 every week, but this is the kind of offense that I think the Giants envisioned. One thing I did want to talk about, I mean, you talked about the vertical pass routes versus the horizontal pass routes. One of the things I wanted to mention is I sort of disagree that the offense was more vertical. Yeah, they threw the ball down the field a little bit more. The passes were a little bit deeper. But if you really examine a lot of those routes, even the ones that were 15 yards down the field, I mean, what you're seeing are a lot of horizontal routes with guys running at multiple levels across the field, a guy short, a guy, you know, in a middle distance. You're seeing a lot of situations where the Giants are trying to use their athletes, you know, at whatever depth it is, 5 yards, 10 yards, 15 yards, simply coming across the field and outrunning the coverage. I mean, you have guys like Odell, you have Sterling Shepard, you know, Cody Latimer is a good athlete. They'll miss Evan Engram, you know, in this regard for the next few weeks. But I do think that what we're seeing from Pat Shurmur on offense is that it may not be 5 yard throws all the time, but we are seeing a lot of sort of horizontal type designs in the pass routes. I really like what we're seeing because you see guys at multiple levels, and I do like the way that the design of their passing game is developing.
Yeah. You know, you make a good point, Ed. Pat Shurmur has come up with a mix, and with the getting back to the point I was trying to make last week against or 2 weeks ago against Dallas, they only went with that horizontal passing scheme. They put more vertical elements in against Houston. And I think by mixing it up, they were able to keep the Texans' defense on their heels. So, that, you know, I agree with you. I think the mix has been pretty good. It was certainly effective because it got the job done. And, you know, we'll see how they approach it going forward. But certainly this is indeed what we expected when, you know, Pat Shurmur was hired, and based on what we saw in the spring and in the summer, how we thought this offense might look. And, you know, it's very encouraging, and it's going to be a very exciting offense if they can maintain it.
Yes, it will. Patty, let's get to our second question. And this one, you know, this is a great example for me of how much I just love Twitter names. This one comes from Mezico Ms. Mofongo.
Whoa.
And our friend Mezico wants to know, do we think the Giants can finally get to 30 points offensively on Sunday? And he adds the caveat that they might need to against the Saints.
Yeah, the Saints are a very explosive offense, and you definitely can get into a shootout with them when it, you know, and we've seen that with this Giant team and in past games against the Saints. I do think at some point the Giants will get to 30 points. I think they're finally, hopefully, trending in the right direction after last week. And like Pat Shurmur said on Monday's call, you just need to build on that, which, you know, hopefully they will be able to do. With that said, you know, you look at the stats from last week's game, and it's kind of interesting because even though the Giants clearly won the time of possession battle, 35-30 to 24-30. The Texans still had more yardage. The Texans, you know, they didn't do as much with the yardage, but they still had more net yards. But in the end, it's what you do with those yards, you know. The Texans also had penalties that set them back. So I think if the Giants can play a relatively mistake-free game on offense, if they don't have drop balls, which I don't believe they had. I think maybe they had one or two last week. I can't remember exactly, but it was a lot less than what they've had in past games. And if they just keep doing what they're doing, and above all, the important thing, finishing the assignments, blocking, and not making the stupid mistakes that they've made in the first two games, then yeah, I don't see any reason why they can't go to 30 points.
Neither do I, Patty. You know, I've said this. I said it Sunday. I said it on our show yesterday. I think that what we saw against the Texans is the blueprint for the way that the Giants want to play offense. And I think that, you know, to be honest, I mean, I was just looking a little bit. I was actually just starting to consider, you know, the game on Sunday against the Saints. And I look at Drew Brees, and I look at that Giants secondary, and I think, to be honest, the Giants are going to have to put up a hefty number of points to win this game on Sunday. So I think the Giants are moving in the right direction. I don't know if Sunday will be the day that they hit 30. It may, you know, as our questioner says, it may have to be, because this is an explosive New Orleans offense with a tremendous quarterback, a New Orleans defense, you know, that probably isn't all that great. So we'll have to see. I think the Giants are going to hit 30, you know, multiple times this year. Let's cross our fingers and we'll hope that Sunday is one of them, and you know, and we'll see what happens. Patty, let's take our first break of the show for a word from our sponsors, then we'll come back and take a few more of our listener questions.
Locked On NFL is becoming everyone's favorite daily national NFL podcast. Mondays, it's the local experts on the biggest stories of the week. Tuesdays, former NFL quarterback Sage Rosenfels joins Matt Williamson. On Wednesday, it is Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus. Thursdays, the great Mike Sando of ESPN joins the show. And on Fridays, get Matt's picks for the weekend games.
Giants fans, let's talk about advice. Patty and I are always being asked for it, but one thing we can't do is tell you who is going to win or lose the games. If you think you know, you've got to check out MyBookie. MyBookie has been in business for years, has great online reviews, and offers an easy-to-use mobile site. You win, MyBookie pays. It's that simple. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Wait until after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and MyBookie will give you an extra $25 free play on deposits of more than $100. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to enter the promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate this special offer for our listeners. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Okay, Giants fans, Ed Valentine and Patricia Traina here, going to our second segment of Locked On Giants as we take your questions on a Twitter Tuesday. Let's continue with a question from Jarrett K. And Jarrett wants to know what specific things we saw that Chad Wheeler did better than Eric Flowers had done in the first two games. He said it feels like Flowers could have easily given up three sacks like Wheeler did.
Well, I think first off, you have to give credit to who Wheeler was facing. I mean, J.J. Watt is probably going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. I mean, the man is just absolutely amazing on and off the field, I might add. You know, J.J. Watt, and it's interesting because I did break down Chad Wheeler's performance for a forthcoming piece that's coming out today on Tuesday for The Athletic. And there was that one play where it looked like J.J. Watt was offside when, in fact, he wasn't. What he did was he was watching the ball. And just as soon as he picked up, Greco was about to snap it, J.J. Watt timed his pass rush so that he was going with just as soon as that ball was going. And hence he caught Chad Wheeler, you know, I don't want to say asleep at the switch, but, you know, Chad Wheeler didn't respond as quickly as he could have. That's, I think, experience or a lack of experience on Chad Wheeler. You got to remember, this is only his second NFL season. In college, I think he was predominantly a left tackle. So now he's playing on the right side. And, you know, based on the reports, obviously, it sounded like the coaching staff really gave him a crash course at that right tackle spot, you know, to get him ready, you know, and refresh everything he learned in the summertime. So I don't think, you know, Wheeler did badly against Watt, you know, despite what the numbers say. I think some of the things that Wheeler did, number one, is he kept his feet moving against Watt. There was one play I diagrammed for The Athletic where it was a Saquon Barkley, I think, 13-yard run. And Wheeler just, you know, picked up Watt beautifully, latched onto him, kept his hands inside the shoulder pads to avoid holding. And he basically slid with him up and down and kept him, you know, he influenced him out of the way until Barkley was safely into the second level. So, you know, that's one of the things I saw him do very well in the run game. He held up against Watt in the run game. You know, the passing game, again, Watt gives guys fits. And you know, I saw in watching Wheeler, he kept his head up most of the time. You know, there were a couple times where for example, that one swing move that Watt put on him, you know, Wheeler, who was 6'7", I think got a little too low and Watt just went high and swam over him. So overall, I don't think, you know, even though the numbers would say otherwise, I thought Wheeler was a little bit more technically sound and more committed to his technique than, say, maybe Flowers has been the first couple weeks of the season.
Patty, I'm going to answer this in a really simple fashion. Whatever the numbers were, whatever the pressures and the hurries were that Wheeler gave up, I think he gave up three sacks and was responsible for five of the eight pressures against Eli. I think there were two telltale signs. The guy next to him, Patrick Omame, played better. And if you think that in an offensive line, I mean, the reality of it is it's a five-man unit. Guys work together. and the performance of one guy can undoubtedly be impacted by the player next to him. But when it comes down to it, Wheeler did two things. He did not commit any penalties, and there were no obvious egregious assignment errors that left guys running free. And for me, I don't care what the other numbers were. Those two things, you know, made his performance an improvement over what we saw from Eric Flowers the first 2 weeks.
Absolutely. You know, we go back and we've talked about this on our show before, the comments that, you know, Eric Flowers made about playing against Calais Campbell and not really, I guess, knowing, you know, that he was going to, I guess, be a speed rusher. You know, the faint comments that Mike Shula made about, you know, knowing what to do and whatnot. You know, I guess in retrospect, you could say that those were all telltale signs. And then, you know, you look at what Wheeler did. Wheeler came and he was prepared. You know, you're not going to shut out J.J. Watt. I'm sorry. The guy is just, he's phenomenal. Like I said, you're not going to shut him out. But you're absolutely right. Omame played better. There were no jailbreaks on that side. And just overall, you know, kudos to Wheeler. I had my doubts about that move, but, you know, he really stepped up, and I got to give the young man his props.
Patty, let's take one more offensive line question here. Jonathan Jay wants to know, how much did John Greco's veteran presence help the offensive line? It seemed like communication was much improved.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that, you know, John Greco was, you know, stepped in and there was not a drop off. And this is not a slight to John Jalapio, who did a good job, you know, the first couple of weeks. But, you know, the point was raised on the conference call, I think, with Pat Shurmur yesterday, in which, you know, Greco is a guy who has been with Shurmur before. So he knows his offense. He has a familiarity with it. And Greco also is, I think, a 13-year veteran, if I'm not mistaken. Is it 13 years?
I think he's in his 11th year, Patty.
Okay, 11 years. Okay. So the guy has been there, done that. This isn't, you know, a rookie that's stepping in and against that defensive front, by the way, which, you know, I don't care what anybody says. That's a really good defensive front the Texans have. And Greco stepped in. You know, he didn't get flustered. He took control, made the you know, from what we could tell, made proper calls, protection calls, and the line played well. It was probably the best performance that line has put forth this season. And again, this isn't a knock against Jalapio, who, you know, I think was starting to, you know, settle in and find his niche. But you put a guy in there who's played center before. Remember, this is really the first year Jalapio was starting to play center. So Greco maybe had a little bit more experience that he could bring to the table, to where if he saw something, he'd be like, aha, I better change the protection call here because they're looking like they're going to be doing this. So I'm sure that had something to do with it. And I thought he played a really, really good game. And, you know, there was one play where he took on a block and then he rubbed off and took off another blocker. And it was just, you know, he was very active, very spry, fresh legs, and played, I thought, a really good game.
I would agree, Patty. You know, the thing of it is, I looked at Greco and Greco played like an 11-year guy who knew what he was doing. He played like a guy who's in his third tour of duty with Pat Shurmur. You think he was with Shurmur in St. Louis and in Cleveland and now with the Giants. And, you know, you and I have both talked to Greco on a few occasions. And I remember when Greco first signed with the Giants last year, you know, he said, you know, he had been kicking around looking for work after Cleveland let him go. And he basically said, I think I can still play. And he hasn't had a lot of opportunities to show it, but I think, and who knows how it's going to work out over the next 13 games, but I think he showed that not only can he make the calls and not only does he know what he's doing, I think he showed on Sunday, you know, that yes, he can still play some.
Yeah, he definitely did. And, you know, kudos to John. He's a really terrific guy. You know, like you said, we've both spoken with him. Very patient, answers the questions, tries to give you as much as he can without obviously giving away state secrets. So you could tell he really knows what he's talking about, and he's also very respected in that locker room, you know, as a veteran leader.
Patty, football players are secretive about telling you stuff. I had never noticed.
Yeah, they actually are.
Yeah, that's
see that, Ed? You learn something new every day.
Yeah, I had never noticed that. Anyway, Patty, let's take our second break for another word from our sponsors. Then we'll come back and we will answer a couple more of your questions before we call it a show on this Twitter Tuesday. Okay, Giants fans, Ed Valentine and Patricia Traina back here for our third segment of our Twitter Tuesday Locked On Giants show. And we have a couple more questions to get to today, Patty. So let's get to one from Goodfella, who wants to know, which injured player can the Giants least afford to lose for the game against New Orleans? Eli Apple, Olivier Vernon, Evan Engram, and he actually lists Snacks Harrison in here as well.
How about all of the above? I mean, how do you pick one? They are all important. And by the way, Snacks Harrison, from what I understand, he should be fine. He may be limited in practice this week, you know, sort of as a maintenance type of deal, but I don't think he's in danger of missing Sunday's game, at least, you know, based on what information I have as of today. But again, seriously, how do you pick one of those guys? I mean, Eli Apple, obviously you want to have him because, you know, the Saints have a really good receiver, Michael Thomas. You know, Olivier Vernon, a pass rusher, you know, you want to have him on the field. Evan Engram, who's a piece on the offense who you can move around. So, I mean, I can't pick one, can you?
Well, the one that jumps to mind first and foremost, you know, as I have been thinking about Drew Brees and what he can do, excuse me, versus, you know, what we saw from Deshaun Watson on Sunday. The one that jumps to mind is Eli Apple, simply because I think the secondary is going to need all of the help that it can get. But the reality of it is, you're absolutely right, Patty. All of those guys, you know, are key players for the Giants. When you think about facing Drew Brees, I think we forget just how good and how dominant Olivier Vernon, you know, was in his, you know, new role, really, as a kind of a hybrid linebacker and sometime defensive end, you know, throughout the summer, and just how much of a difference he can make, you know, on this defense if he's healthy, especially when you have, you know, a guy like Drew Brees, who it's going to be critical for the Giants to try to disrupt his timing somehow, not necessarily to get sacks. We've talked, you know, multiple times, and Pat Shurmur's talked about, you know, it's just as important, you know, to get pressure and disrupt timing and make the quarterback move. And that's something that Olivier Vernon does very well. So, you know, so both of those guys are critical to the defense, and we've talked multiple times about the things that Evan Engram brings to the offense. You know, I love Red Ellison. He's a very reliable target. He's a better blocker than Evan Engram, but he cannot create the downfield matchup problems that Engram can. So the Giants will miss all of those guys if they're not available. We'll see as the week unfolds. If the Giants get, you know, Eli Apple and Olivier Vernon back, it would certainly be good news for them if they did.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Pat Shurmur keeps telling us that, you know, Olivier Vernon is getting close. I think we will know that he's on his way back when he can actually get through a practice, at least on a limited basis. And, you know, if he continues to work on the side, that to me is a pretty good indication that he still is not yet, you know, over that hump. But, you know, he's getting there. You know, I got to believe that after, what's this now, his fifth week since that injury, I think?
I believe you're right, because I think it happened in practice after the second right. preseason game.
Right. So, I mean, point being is with high ankle sprains, those are usually a 4 to 6 week affair. The more serious ones, I think, go up to 8 weeks. But, you know, I think certainly he's got to be turning the corner, because I've only seen him a couple of times in the locker room. And each time I did see him, he didn't have the boot on. He wasn't walking with a noticeable limp. But, you know, that's the first step. Obviously, you got to be able to, you know, run and push off of that leg. And you know, so you can't really say, oh, you know, he's better now because he's not wearing a boot or he's not limping. The real test is pushing off and pivoting and doing all the football moves that, you know, are not usually part of your everyday life. So hopefully he's making progress. And as far as Eli Apple is concerned, you know, same thing. Groins are tricky. If you rush back from them, you can set yourself back. And I think that's the last thing the Giants want to do. I think they want to, you know, play it safe and not risk setting these guys back. And I think that's a smart approach.
Patty, we have one final question today. And as I'm looking at it, I'm going to read it. I'm going to tell you that I'm going to take this one first. And before I even read the question, I'm going to tell you that I think the suggestion of the question is ridiculous. So here we go. Question from Tim Coffey. Do you think the Giants might actually be better off without Evan Engram as this offense settles in? Rhett Ellison is a better all-around tight end, and it seemed that Pat Shurmur and Eli Manning had too many weapons at first. I'm just thinking Ellison is a better fit for this scheme, and he can block. And Tim, I've already given you my answer to that one. I think the suggestion of the Giants being better off without Evan Engram is completely and utterly ridiculous. I love Rhett Ellison. I think Rhett Ellison can catch the ball in underneath areas. He's a good blocker. But Evan Engram brings a skill set that very few tight ends in the NFL can match. He brings size and speed and route running ability that very few tight ends have. And as far as the suggestion that there are too many weapons, that's nonsense, because the more weapons you have, the more decisions you force a defense to make. Without Engram, as good as Rhett Ellison might be and as dependable as he might be underneath, that makes it easier for a defense to decide, you know, how they want to line up and who they want to double and where they're going to roll their coverage. It takes one, you know, downfield worry off the table for them. So I find this suggestion that you can have too many weapons, you know, to be silly. And I find the idea that the Giants would be better without Engram, you know, to be pretty much absurd.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there, Ed. You know, look, this is a good problem to have when you have a lot of weapons, you know, and let's be real. Every week, someone's going to emerge as the guy. You know, you're not going to necessarily, you know, go totally to Odell. And Tim, I'm going to refer you back to the past years when Odell was the only weapon this team had. And what happened? What happened was the defenses doubled and tripled him and took him out of the equation. Therefore, saying to the Giants, okay, you know what? We just took away your only weapon. Good luck figuring out how to beat us. Well, the Giants struggled. They couldn't figure out how to beat teams when they took Odell out of the picture. So now you've got Odell, you've got Sterling Shepard, you've got Saquon Barkley, you have Evan Engram. The Giants have choices, and when one goes down, they still have more choices. And it's just, you know, like you said, good luck defenses trying to figure out how to stop us, because we've got options and these options are versatile enough to where we can pull out wrinkles that you haven't even thought of. So I agree with you, Ed. I think, you know, the idea of Engram not being part of this offense is just not happening. You know, I get the question. I get where Tim's probably trying to go with this, but it's just, it's not realistic. And it's just, I'd be stunned if anybody in the Giants building thought that, you know, even had this thought cross their mind.
I also get the idea that, you know, Ellison's a better blocker than Evan Engram. Scott Simonson's probably a better blocker than Evan Engram too. You know, but that's not the point. That's not what Evan Engram's job is, you know, technically. I mean, yes, there are times he'll have to block, but Evan Engram is on the Giants roster and in their lineup because of what he can bring to the passing game. And his loss over the next few weeks, you know, as you indicated, Patty, the Giants have other weapons. They have other ways, but his loss in the offense is going to be felt.
It sure is. Absolutely. You know, we talked about this, I think, you know, before. We mentioned that the Giants don't really have a third receiver. You know, Cody Latimer has been filling the role, but, you know, I guess more so when Engram hasn't been in there. And I've always said that, you know, or believe that Engram is actually that third receiver without, you know, being officially that third receiver, if you know what I mean. So you take him out of the offense, and that's one less chess piece you have to move. And you know, just the notion that they're better off without him, I'm sorry, it's just not registering with me.
Me neither, Patty. And, you know, with that said, I think that is our final question for this Twitter Tuesday. We thank you, as always, Giants fans, for listening, for sending your questions, for your support. Remember, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, whatever your favorite way to listen to podcasts is, you can find us. So please do, you know, check out Patty's work, you know, just check, at Patricia_Traina, you know, for her work, instead of, tearing your hair out, trying to figure out where she's published things, just check her Twitter feed and you'll figure it out, and check my work at Big Blue View on Twitter and bigblueview.com. And, as always, we thank you, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye bye now.